Okay. So, to start in the normal tradition, get it out of the way, the bad joke. You want a bad joke?
Yes,
please. So apparently in Margaret River, they've developed a new type of wine. And it's supposed to be really good for senior people, so they don't need to get up in the middle of the night to urinate. It's amazing.
Ooh.
And it's called, it's based on, they have Pinot Noir and Pinot
Grigio.
This is called Pinot Mor.
Oh, very good.
Pinot Mor.
Yeah.
Very popular with elderly people, the monks.
Yeah.
No, we don't take any wine.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get the metaphysics. Okay. Okay, Doug, you've been here before. A one, a two, a one, two, three, four.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest things that the wise would later reprove, wishing in madness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Have you ever wondered why it's very rare to get a nun to come and teach here? You know why?
No.
Well, it's just we just chanted it.
Yeah.
Whatever living beings there may be, omitting none.
Yeah.
Let none deceive another or despise any being any state. Let none through anger or will wish harm upon another. Oh boy. Yeah, it's just written into the chanting. Really unfair. So actually we did that chant once over in a retreat at Jhana Grove, so we changed it. Whatever living beings there may be, omitting monks, monks who anger or ill will wish harm upon another. So anyway, just messing around, having fun. So that's really important, to keep a light-heartedness in whatever you do. And with that light-heartedness, especially in meditation. I know that many times people take meditation so seriously. Sit up! Shut up! Don't move! And they have these, in the Zen traditions, people with a stick go behind you. And they whack you. You know that happened, I was told that in China, recently, a couple of years ago, on a Zen retreat. Everybody was sitting down there, and the teacher came, and somebody was nodding, half asleep. So they whacked them with a stick. Yeah, it's tradition. You know what happened? She got out her mobile phone, turned it on, called the police. They came and took the monk away. True story. You can't do that these days, but it's also totally not necessary. And the point is, we don't act out of fear. We act out of wisdom and kindness. So kindness and joy are such an important part of meditation. And to emphasize the point, what is this group called, Doug?
Club Med Armadale.
Yeah, this is Club Med Armadale. Club Meditation Armadale. Because that means it's more sort of joyful. It's not anything to do with concentration. Otherwise it becomes what? Concentration camp. Which is not nice. So it's all about learning how to relax to the max and be peaceful and let go. So this is where we encourage people how to let go. There is a time where we really need to work hard, but we get so tense, we get so tight, that if we don't know how to let go, that is where we stress, we get sick, and we have even psychological problems as well, just not knowing how to relax and let go. And it's amazing that so many people don't know how to sleep at night.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But apparently that many, many people, I've been told this when I go teaching all over the world, many, many people actually listen to my talks just in bed, and it always sends them to sleep. I'm not quite sure how to take that. But anyway, it has a good outcome, so I'll give myself the benefit of the doubt. You relax people rather than boring them. But anyway, it is just learning how just to let go. When it's time to let go, to let go. So, even when you do go to bed at night, how many of you take your slippers into bed with you? You don't? What do you do to your slippers? Don't you put them under the bed?
Yeah,
exactly. So, if you can, you can write, even with a felt tip pen on one of the slippers, say on the left, past. On the slipper on the right foot, future. So when you take them off, the past and the future, you put them under your bed. And you don't take them into the sleep with you. So you can just let go. You know, little exercises, not just saying, oh, let go, just actually doing something which emphasizes, something physical, which emphasizes, you know, that you're actually letting go of something is really, really helpful. So that's one of the reasons why a little slipper simile, left, right, and then past, future, so you can put them under the bed and let them go. So when you can let go of the past and the future, amazing, you've got nothing to worry about. Even Snoopy the dog. I've been using a lot of Snoopy wisdom for the last few months, ever since Chinese New Year, because this is the year of the dog. So this, we really recognize the importance of dogs, and especially in philosophy. Snoopy is one of my favorite American philosophers. Number one, he makes sense. And I can understand it. So little Snoopy the dog, he once said, worrying about the future never stops bad things happening. Whether you worry about them or not, they happen. But what it does stop you doing is enjoying the present moment. You're wasting so much time by worrying about things. So yeah, they're going to happen anyway. So, until they happen, just enjoy this moment. And anyway, if you worry about them, they happen much quicker. And they're worse. So don't worry. And be happy. So simple. So simple to do, but can you do that? No, because it needs training, like everything else in life. You have to train how to walk, you have to train how to drive a car, you have to train, I don't know what other skills you have. As for me, I just was telling people I did a marriage blessing last Saturday, and I said, I've got no training at all in marriage. I don't know why you asked me. I'm a celibate monk for the last 43 years to tell you about relationships. But actually, sometimes it works. So anyway, you don't need the training. Well, you do need the training, especially to understand just how to let go, how to meditate. Because a lot of times, we haven't been taught that. We're very good at doing things, but not very good at letting go. And being irresponsible. Irresponsibility rocks. For half an hour anyway. So what we do, we sit here and we learn just how to, male simile, how heavy is the glass? The longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. So you learn how to put it down. You let go, relax. Then afterwards, whatever problems you have to fight in this world, whatever responsibilities you have to do, you're much more poised, relaxed, and it means you're more effective. So that's actually how to deal with stresses in life. But sometimes we don't know how to put things down. It doesn't mean throwing it away forever. It means putting it down for a while, letting go, to prepare yourself when you have to pick up the water again and do your work. So this is where we learn how to let go. Now, if meditation is just more work, of course it never achieves anything. If you are trying to do something, work on something, of course it's just more stress for you. It's just like you go to the shop, self-improvement, that's more work. More stress on trying to improve your figure. I always watch my weight. The more you have, the easier it is to watch. That's my statement. I see these thin people, I don't know how they can watch anything. It's just hardly there. So anyway, learning just how to not improve yourself, not change yourself, but care for yourself. Now this was, it came up just a few days ago again. There was this young man. He's went through so much to become a doctor, a GP. And I wasn't actually a GP yet. He was still an intern in the hospital. And one day he came up to me and said, I can't do this anymore. I have to resign from being a doctor, a medical practitioner. I was quite shocked. You know how much work and effort it takes to get to be a doctor? What happened? What had happened to him was one of his patients had died unexpectedly. It was such a tragedy. You know, she was only about 23, 24 years of age. And, you know, he felt, you know, he was not at fault. You know, these things, mistakes happen, or he didn't see what was really going on. No one could have found fault with him. But he, of course, found fault with himself. He thought, you know, maybe if I'd have done something else, done another test, or tried something else, maybe I could have saved her life. But the worst part of it was he had to go up to the husband. And they were just married, you know, maybe a couple of years. And they really, really loved one another. They had to tell the husband that the wife he'd chosen and still loved very much was no more. If that wasn't hard enough, had to tell him that his two young children, babies, had no mother. And imagine what it would be like to say that to somebody. That was his job responsibility. He felt so guilty. The pain was unbearable. So he came to see me as soon as possible and said, I can't do this any longer. That happened again. I couldn't take it. And so that's when I told him, and this is the reason I'm saying this for this meditation. I said, you've misunderstood the whole point of being a doctor, or being any, a nurse, a therapist, a monk, a husband, a wife. Your job is not to cure. Your job is to care. Because if you want to cure your patients, you'll fail many times. You can't always cure things, but you can always care for people. And if you care for them, then you never need to feel guilty. The whole family know they were so cared for, and you did your best. And so you can always be a success. You never need to be a failure. And number two, I said, haha, you will find that many more people recover under your sort of therapy if you make caring more important than curing. And that was such an important thing to understand. And of course, you extend that. Now, he's still a doctor. And he's still sort of a good friend. Every now and again, I keep getting this wrong. It's not endoscopy, it's, you know, when they put the thing up your bum and just
colonoscopy
or whatever it is. Yeah, I call it a bum doctor. colonoscopy. Now he does that. So when one of our monks, he was passing blood, you know, in his stall, and so the doctor said, "Oh, you know, this is could be cancer." So he went. He tried to get an appointment through the ordinary hospitals. Well, you maybe have to wait for 3 months or 4 months, you'll be dead by then. So, you know, we rang around, and one of the best doctors, colonoscopists or whatever, was this student of mine, who I talked about caring, not curing. So when he heard it was a monk, one of my monks, he made him a really quick appointment and paid all the costs, so for free. Because here is just a little bit of payback. You know, you help me, of course we'll help you. So this is caring, not curing. And I say that in meditation. Whatever you're feeling you have in the body, don't try and cure it. That gives you more stress. Care for it. It's really crazy, isn't it? You've got a pain. Don't try and cure it. Care for it. So, you know, you can just put your legs out. Or just, you know, scratch your eye. Don't think, oh no, I'm stronger than this, I'm going to cure it. Now just care for things, and you find your body heals much faster. Your emotional world, all your problems, care for them. Don't cure them. If you try and cure them, they get worse. Care for them, and they tend to ease off. So this is why the whole idea of self-improvement. Who's saying there's something wrong with you anyway? Who's saying that, you know, to change? How many of you are married? Have you ever tried to change your partner? They get worse. Cure them of their bad habits. Their overspending, their sloppiness. It never works. But caring for them does work. You make caring more important than curing. They change by themselves. Weird, isn't it? You care for them, and under that care, that softness, that acceptance, they grow. If that works for partners, for people who are in hospital, how much can that work for you? And that's what meditation is all about. Not trying to cure yourself, but learning how to care. Let it be. One of the other words for caring is called opening the door of your heart. One of the things my father used to say to me, son, wherever you go, whatever you do in your life, the door of my heart will always be open to you. As he said, the door of my house. But I realized later what he meant, my heart. You know how powerful that was? That your father would always love you unconditionally without end, no matter what I did. And I got up to some stupid things. Did I tell you about one of the things I did to my mum once? I don't know, I've told a few people that. You know, I was a bit of a naughty kid. It was her birthday. I was about 7 years of age, could be eight. And what I did was, over in London, West London, where I grew up, there was a fad, a food fad, for eels and mash, jellied eels and mashed potatoes. Disgusting, but you know, just there's lots of disgusting food in this world. But anyway, that was just a fad. Is anyone else from London or East London? Where did it come from? Yeah, okay. But anyway, actually, the truth of the matter is, I was actually brought up in the bush. Shepherd's Bush. You know that one. So anyway, so what I did, my mum's birthday, I went to the shop and I bought a live eel, a live one, because you know, you could cook it yourself. And I just bought, I was only about, you know, I don't know, 8 or 9 or 7 or 8, whatever. I bought the eel alive, and I got a nice little box. I'd already arranged a box and some nice wrapping paper, and I wrapped it really carefully, you know, and put a nice bow around it, and then a nice little gift card to Mummy, with love from your son, XXX. And of course, it was amazing that I could pull this off without laughing. And that was an amazing thing. The restraint I had as a young boy was immense, so that's, you know, why I became a monk. So I gave it, "Happy birthday, Mummy." And then Mummy, oh, she just almost melted, you know, because, oh, what a wonderful, unexpected gift from her little son, you know, and wrapped up all by himself, and a little card in, you know, 7, 8 year old's writing, you know, to Mummy, with love from your son, XXX on your birthday. Oh, and she opened it up, and I was watching her. When she opened it up, and just, you know, lifted up the lid, it was as if this eel had been trained, because it did exactly the right thing. It lifted up its head and looked at my mum, and she screamed as loud as I've ever heard her. And I'd already had my exit strategy worked out. I ran as hard as I could and hid for 2 hours. You know, my mum forgave me. That's my wonderful thing, what mothers do. The door of my heart is still open to you, even if you do look crazy tricks like that. That's a naughty kid. But anyway, what that does to you is open the door of your heart to whoever you are, however you feel, in this moment, let it be. You know what that does? It takes the pressure on you, off you, to try and improve, try and fix it up, trying to be something you're not. It allows you to stay in this present moment, actually to be here. You know, if you've got some business to do, if you know life is not going well for you, you haven't got any money left, you know, you've got problems with partners, you know, you've got problems with your committee and your members in the BSWA. So what do? No. Yeah, just let go and just relax. Open the door of your heart. This is life. You know what happens then? It means you don't have to change it for this moment. Instead, you can just be. And afterwards, no, tomorrow you can fix it up. But right now, you can just relax. If you don't do that, you go crazy. You get sick. You go mad. So I know sometimes some of the jokes I say, people think I must be very close. That's about, I didn't tell you about the fire which they had in Madrid. Didn't you see that in the news? Mm-hmm. No, it was a big fire, and in a very, very poor part of Madrid. And so when they got to the fire brigade eventually came, they saw in the top story there was a woman, and the ladder couldn't reach. They didn't have enough resources to get the proper ladders, and of course didn't have enough water to actually to put out the fire. So they got that little blanket which they use and jump into, and said, "Jump!" She said, "No, I can't." She said, "Jump, it's too far." She was really scared, and when a big flame came up, she had no choice, she jumped. Now the firemen in Madrid, they positioned the blanket and just right underneath her, great position. As she was about to hit the blanket, they went, "All right."
the blanket.
The bed.
Was it red?
Must have been. It's tradition. It's it's only a joke. So anyway, so then when, so what you do is you learn how just to let go of doing old ladies and stuff. So you learn how just to relax the body and allow things to be, which means that you can enjoy this moment. This is actually what the meditation is all about, learning how to enjoy the moment. And everything else just happens. Just being here with kindness. The only two things you really need to do: be here, which is called awareness, and just kindness. You don't need to cure things. That by itself will allow you to sort of come into the present moment by putting your saddles under the bed, just being in this moment, tucking into a nice cozy bed, relaxing and enjoying a nice peaceful sleep. But this is actually, sometimes what's the difference between peace, between meditation and sleep? In meditation, you're aware. You're awake to be able to enjoy the peace. In sleep, you know, you just don't count. So anyway, that's the only difference. So, now is the opportunity to practice what I teach, to walk the talk, to not be a hypocrite, and to learn how to let go, to relax to the max. Okay, repeat. Relax to the max.
Even saying that, it actually works.
Oh, relax. Okay, so I'm sitting up for you. I'm going to go to my usual place. I know where I belong. So, half an hour meditation, don't have any worries to do. I will guide you all the way through. No fear, our gentle arm is here. Okay, here we go. So, first of all, to close your eyes. Ah, oh, this is nice. Put some water. It's not Pinot. So, close your eyes and just experience your body sitting here. How do you feel, bodily wise? Not to sort of complain about it or try and get rid of things. Just be with your body. Give it quality time. So sometimes, you know, work a lot, have to do such a lot of stuff, and it's like coming back and connecting with my body. How are you going down there, body? Body says, oh yeah, nice to see you again. It's been a while. So you feel the body. And when I feel the body, first of all, can I improve my posture, the way I'm sitting? So I don't follow, you know, what books say, or just know what, you know, photographs say. I experience my body and just see what's best for it right now in this time and place. And then I just burp. That's another form of letting go. So if you want to burp as well, go for it. But if you do have wind, please sit in the back. Otherwise, if you're sitting in the front, so many people will have to suffer because of you. That's why I know why people sit in the back often. You know why. So anyway, behave, I jump off. So, feel the body and just learn how to relax it. I start with just focusing on my legs, from the thighs down to the toes. How are you down there? You know, sometimes we talk about mindfulness. What does it mean? What you can do is just ask the question, legs, how are you? Send them a text message with your mind. How you going down there? And the strange thing is, as soon as you ask a question, your awareness goes to that area and you get a reply. Mild eggs say, I see, they're pretty good. Just gonna adjust the toes a little bit. And it's okay to move during the meditation. Because what you're doing is mindfulness gives you feedback. Which means you can move. Does that feel better? If not, try something else. Until you get the best position for your legs. Those sitting on a chair, sometimes your legs are just too long for the chair, so you can push them forward. Or later on, get a cushion to put under your butt. So it raises your butt so the legs are not sort of uncomfortable. For those with short legs, you can put a cushion underneath the chair. So not the chair, underneath your feet. So find the best position. And once your legs feel pretty well adjusted, then your butt. People fidget a lot of times because they pay no attention to this important muscle, group of muscles in your body which take a lot of weight and pressure. Especially if you're well-rounded like me. I've got a well-rounded personality and a body to suit. So if you want to fidget, it's fine to do so. Until your awareness tells you your butt is in a really good position. Now we come up to our back. And that is, a lot of people have back problems. Oh, my back's pretty good these days. So, stretch your back. I like stretching it first of all, because many animals do that. Dogs do that, and the ear of the dog. I'm just focusing on the wisdom of dogs. Stretching your back like a dog does, and then relaxing it. Letting it go. See how it feels. If you want to move your back against the backrest of the chair, fine. If you want to push it forward, fine. Find the best position. This takes awareness and it's kindness. It puts forth the effort to actually to find that best position. And your hands. Hands define how your arms are, so get your hands and arms in a comfortable position. However, that position is as long as it feels okay. Remember, you have to keep it here for about another 25 minutes. So you've got to get a pretty comfortable position to be able to maintain that posture for such a time. And then I go to my shoulders. Again, that's always a position where people find tightness, stress. And sometimes what I do is I tighten up the shoulders. It's almost like counterintuitive. I tighten them up first and then I let them go. And I always tend to actually to go into a deeper state of relaxation when I started. My mindfulness feels those muscles. I imagine just the two ends of the muscles on either side of the spine being pulled apart, being stretched. That's called strain. And imagine just letting go of both ends. Letting go of both ends until my shoulders feel pretty relaxed. And after I can move up to my neck, especially my throat. Always have a slight allergy, itch in my throat. It's because my father used to have asthma, so picked up a bit of sensitivity to allergies, but not nowhere near as intense as my poor dad. So I feel my throat and I learn how just to make peace with it, to care for it, not to cure it, to care. Opening the door of my heart to the itch in my throat. If you need to cough, please cough. I did that just to help other people cough. Leading by example is called. Once my throat relaxes, go up to my head, making sure it's well balanced on top of the neck, and also experiencing, being aware of the muscles around the eyes and the mouth, the head as well, the forehead. As people say, you can tell a person's emotions by what's happening on their face. Tightness, stress, it's written on your face because your muscles scrunch up. Now I'm aware of those muscles. It's quite easy, a bit of trial and error, how to loosen everything. My awareness gives me feedback. I can see they're getting more loose. The tightness around my eyes is loosening. And the face feels it's eased, it's free, it's relaxed, it's not tight anymore. But once those muscles relax, so do the cause of that tightness, the emotions. Many negative emotions are expressed in the muscles of our body, which is one of the reasons why if we do have a lot of anger, stress, fear, it's expressed so long on our bodies, it causes illnesses. And I look at my whole body just sitting here. From head to toe, just one unit. It's pretty comfortable. And sometimes it's so relaxed. It is just delightful. Just like you are been in a hot bath, just relaxed your whole body. Or you woke up in the morning in bed, nice and cozy, having taken more, so you don't have to go to the loo. Feel really cozy, warm, relaxed. It's a delightful feeling. Relaxation. I really get into it. After a lot of practice, I just indulge in the delight of a relaxed body. You know what happens? Your relaxation goes even deeper. And then, once my body is pretty much at ease, and I go to my emotional world, my mind. This is where I introduce this idea of a peaceometer. How peaceful are you right now? Or the opposite, how agitated? Give it a number from 1 to 10. Number 1 means really peaceful. Number 2 means very agitated. So, give it a number. Be honest, because no one's going to check up on you. This is a standard psychology technique to get you aware of your peaceometer. You're looking at a part of your mind, your emotional world, your inner world, which is the core problem. Going straight to it. How peaceful, how agitated are you? How relaxed is your mind? How afraid it is? Once you aware of your peaceometer. Next thing is to watch that needle move. What makes you more peaceful? What makes you more agitated? As you watch your peaceometer, down, down, down. More and more peace. What makes you peaceful? What disturbs you inside? one of the things you'll find is when you worry about the future and the past, your needle goes way up, really agitated. When you stay in this present moment, not trying to cure anything, but to care for this moment. This moment is where your future is made. You learn from the present moment much more than from the past. So the present is important to you. So open your door of your heart to this moment. Let it be. And you find it becomes very delightful just being here. Just knowing how this feels right now. No need to ask yourself, am I doing it right or am I doing it wrong? You open the door of your heart with kindness. There's no right, no wrong here. It just is. Just be here. Kind, open, enjoy this moment. Relaxing to the max. Like your mind is resting on a soft satin cotton-filled pillow, really at ease, not a worry in the world, just being. You deserve to relax. It will equip you to whatever you have to face afterwards. You need this. How does it feel? You understand the peace and the delight of peace. It's easy to get into it. Watching your peace orbiter, the more the needle goes to one, closer to what, the more peace at ease you feel, the more happiness, delight, natural joy comes up. So simple, not needing anything, just be. Caring for this moment, accepting yourself, accepting this moment exactly as it is. This moment belongs, is appreciated, therefore it brings you joy. Often what happens now, become aware of our breathing. There's nothing else really moving. You breathe in and out. Doesn't matter how you know, where you know, just know that's all. I know my breath going in. I know my breath going out. And as it goes in, I imagine breathing in peace, breathing in energy, breathing in health, whatever you want to bring in with every in-breath. Imagine it, picture it, visualize it, and just bring it in to your body and mind. Often thing, imagine just beautiful white golden light on your breath, riding it like a horse, going right into your body with every in-breath. And as you breathe out, imagine tightness, tension, tiredness, ill health, whatever you'd like to release, let go. All going out with your out breath. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go. Breathing in peace. Breathe out, let go.
quiet for 5 minutes now. And then we will come close to the end of meditation, but for 5 minutes, I'm just going to be silent. getting close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? How relaxed is the body? How peaceful is your mind? Just delight in just being here, free from the past and the future, enjoying the moment with kindness, opening the door of your heart to now. Is coming close to the end of meditation. So I'm going to now ring the gong three times. At the end of the third ringing of the gong, that's the sign to open your eyes to end the meditation. And the third ringing from the gong. Cheers. So now, have we got any questions from the box, or are we going to now think outside the box?
No. So let's just go to the chocolate social. That's why there was no questions in the box. But anyway, it's nice to think outside the box. But actually, that a good example of that, there was, I read this, that some gentleman, very smart fellow, decided to hold his own funeral while he was still alive. You know, because he was apparently only had a couple of weeks to live. So he decided, why not? Sort of, you know, have his funeral before. For two reasons. Number one, he could enjoy all the wonderful things people said about him. Because I've been to many funerals, conducted a few, and then all the time people say such wonderful, nice things about you. What a wonderful son he was, even though he scared me with the meal. How kind they were. How wonderful their cooking was, whatever it was. And you always say nice things at funerals. And a terrible thing is you're not there to enjoy it. So it's really a bit of a waste, isn't it? So he decided to hold his own funeral a couple of weeks before he died, so he could hear, you know, all the wonderful things said about him. And also so you could actually see who actually turned up. So he could amend his will while he still had the time. And he could enjoy the feast afterwards. So I say, you know, that's a wonderful example of thinking outside the box. Well, I don't know why I'm talking about funerals, but I did. Oh, I got some wonderful
You know, funerals is about celebrating life and just, you know, enjoying everything about life. Yeah, sometimes things are difficult, but, you know, there's always amazing stuff. And, you know, a lot of times when you go to these funerals, because I'm the monk, you know, you walk in front of the hearse. And, you know, it was the case at Guildford Cemetery once. I don't know why this happened. You know, Guildford Cemetery, the old cemetery next to the airport. And the funeral director, you know, didn't really get the correct instructions where the grave was. And there's, you know, the old joke, you know, which is about, you know, what happens, you know, when the funeral director gets lost. He'd lost the plot. But this actually happened. And we were walking along, and I don't know what the people thought. And the funeral director said, "Hey, jump around, do you know where we're supposed to go?" I haven't got it, because no one told me. No one told me either. And we're walking, and I saw the corner of my eye that a couple of people, the longest way, they're waving at us, "Over here, over here." I said, "Look, over there." So you get to know a lot of the funeral directors, and I think they tell all their funny stories and scary stories as well. Because there's this one funeral director I've known her for a long time. She said she's about to retire. She's working for Bower and O'Day. And I said, oh, first of all, I thought that name meant Bower and O'Dea. I thought calling O'Dea was a very good name for a funeral parlour. It's actually pronounced O'Day, not O'Dea. I think she should put an R in the end because that would be a burn for Bower and O'Dea. Anyway, that. So, you know, I'd get a bit bored, you know, just walking to the gravesite. So I asked her, I said, "Have you got any nice stories about, you know, any ghosts?" Because, you know, you work with ghosts all the time. You must say, "No, some ghost stories." And then what she told me, she said, "Oh, yeah, I see them all the time." She's so nonchalant. I said, "Well, give me an example." And this is what she said, almost verbatim. She said, "Sometimes I work in the office, you know, in the funeral parlour. Working in the office there, and I see one of the dead people just walking past my office, and I tell him or her, get back in your box." They like a bit of exercise as well. It's true. But all the funny things which happen at a funeral, I don't know why I'm in this sort of mood. But anyway, maybe it must be the last AGM at Perth. But anyway, there was one of the monks. He used to be a funeral director. He was a fellow Harry from Balmain. And in that he wrote this wonderful little book about his life story, from Buddha to Balmain. Oh. Yeah, nice little story. And he started it off. You know, if you're going to ever write something, the first few lines, they capture your attention, or you just put the book down. And what he said, because Balmain was the port, the docks of Sydney, really rough area. And he said, if you still have your two front teeth by the time you're four, you're a girl. They all get into fights. And he said all these amazing little stories. Because, you know, he got a job as a funeral director. And he said that once he went to this old block of flats in Sydney, you know, very old. And the people that, you know, those days, you'd stay in there just, you know, maybe, you know, for 30, 40 years. You wouldn't move. And, you know, you'd actually die there. So, everyone knew one another in the block of flats. They had about four or five stories. And number two, now, the stairs were very narrow, and they only had a very small elevator lift to go up and down. So when they got the call, the gentleman, the old guy in the top story, had passed away, they had to go and collect the body. And when they went up there, they realised there's no way you can actually lay a stretcher down, you know, the gurney, you actually have to take the body away. And they said, what should we do? You can't take it down the stairs. So they thought the only way to do this was get in the lift and hold the dead person vertical. And of course they did that. So imagine the scene, okay? These two men, like funeral directors, in black suits, black ties, really somber, and this old guy who people had known for years, you know, in this block of flats, they knew he was dead, and holding him up between them. When they, you know, pressed the the ground floor in the elevator. They were just hoping that it wouldn't stop halfway. But there's something which is called one of the most, this was even Stephen Hawking, who died, had to agree this was even one of the most important laws of physics. It's called Murphy's Law. He was a genius, Mr. Murphy, where he came from. And if it can happen, it will happen. So halfway down, the lift stopped and the doors parted. And there was this little old lady who was about to go shopping. And she was there, and as the doors opened, she saw this old fellow she knew had passed away, with these two guys in black on either side. And if that wasn't bad enough, somehow or other they lost control of the body and it started falling. It fell on the poor old lady. They lost control of it. Well, what the heck can we do now? Because she fainted. No, she was unconscious. So they thought the only thing they can do is pick up the body, take it down, and the other one rushed up because they thought they might have another customer. But they gave her a cup of tea and she survived. Oh, there's a lot of lovely stories about all the things. But what I'm saying this for is that you can bring joy into anything in life. You don't have to have any fear at all. Because it's the fear which makes you see things in a bad way. The old two bad bricks in the wall story over at Bolognano Monastery, first went over there. 35 years now I've been up there. Mm-hmm. Long time. And does it show?
No.
Really? It's amazing. Because some people ask me that. They said, are you really? I'm 67 this year. I said, are you really 67? I said, yeah. Well, you know, you don't look it. What's the secret? Is it meditation? Is it your low stress lifestyle? Is it eating fish and chips? I said, no. I said, well, why do you look young? I said, because I've never been married. You know, people laugh at that, you know. So there must be some truth in it. But when you say these things, people, oh yeah. So anyway, so enjoying, just having a bit of fun. So when I was doing this, these bricks, of course, you make mistakes. And so, are any of you perfectionists? So I was a perfectionist, so every brick had to be perfect, every one of them. And so if they were wrong, I'd take them off and start again. And know what happened? After I finished my first brick wall, you know what you do? You stand back to admire your handiwork. Finished, oh my goodness. I'd missed two bricks. All the rest were horizontal, these ones were at an angle. They spoiled the whole wall. So what did I do? I tried to scrape out the mortar so I could start again. But the mortar was like stone. It was like hardened uranium. I don't know what's the hardest thing in life. But it's just impossible. So, and I couldn't stand my mistakes. Because, you know, I was a perfectionist, especially when everybody could see it. So what did I do next? I thought, I'll ask to get some dynamite. Blow it up, start again. Could you get it those days? Now, we knew a fellow who got a blasting license. It's amazing what you can get in those days. And anyway, so I said, can I get some? No, we can't afford it. And so it means I'm stuck with my really bad wall. I was. For 3 months, I was so upset. Every time I looked at that wall, I saw my two mistakes. Every time I actually would wake up in nightmares. You know, with nightmares, a little mistake, you wake up with a sort of a sweat and think, oh my goodness, what have I done? And every time a visitor came, I would make sure that I was the one who took them around, so I could take them somewhere else and never see my mistakes. So you know what happened? I was so upset, so ashamed of my wall. And when somebody came and they saw that wall, and I was with them. They told me, that is a beautiful wall. And I was shocked. I was told them, I said, are you visually impaired? Okay, I said, are you blind? I wasn't very sensitive in those days. Are you blind? Can't you see those two bad bricks? And then, that's when they said to me, yes. But I can also see the 998 good bricks as well. And then I realized I was the blind one. For 3 months, all I ever saw was my mistakes. Every time I thought of the wall, I thought my mistakes. Every time I dreamed of it, I dreamed of my mistakes. Every time I saw that wall, those two bricks was all I saw. I was blind. I needed someone else to tell me about what was the left, the right, above and below. Those mistakes. When I realized that, I could see the wall like he did, and it was a beautiful wall. And I wasn't ashamed of it anymore. And in fact, when I taught that for the first time at the old Cancer Wellness Association, then the Cancer Support Association, then it's now called Solaris in Cottesloe Railway Parade, then this builder came up. He said, Ajahn, you don't need to worry about making mistakes. Every bricklayer makes mistakes. But, he said, in the building industry, when one of our tradies makes a mistake, we tell our client it's a feature. And we charge them an extra $2,000 for it. So if any of you ever get enough money to buy a house or get a mortgage or something, please understand that those mistakes are called features. Especially by the real estate agents selling those things. It's got character. So the word of actually means someone made a mistake. But, you know, that's so true. But, you know, when things are a little bit not as you expect, that gives you character, gives feature in life. And I love that sort of little simile. So when things go wrong in life, it's the features of our existence. So, for some people say, well, what happens if you've got 998 bad bricks and then, of course, it's breaking boundaries, it's art. It is confronting your ideas of perfection. And then there's something to that. Because I don't do the trees in the forest before, but there was one of the monks over in Bodhinyana Monastery years, only a few years ago. His brother came to stay. And this was a story where we didn't have enough space. A Bodhinyana Monastery, it's no serpentine. Even now, it's just very hard to get people a place to stay. So, what we did, I told him, I said, well, your brother can't stay. There's no place, especially if he stays in a hotel. We've got a little caravan park down the road. And he said, no, it's okay. It's my brother. We grew up together. We'll stay in the same room. And those of you who've been to see monastery, the huts are very small. They're only, 3 meters by 2.4, standard size. And that's not much, but he said, that's my brother. And I told him, now listen, you are, getting on. And when you are getting on, that leads me up to another story about old age, about this fellow who said, it's really hard when you're old. And he said, I'm old, it's really tough. And, my eyes, I'm like half blind, I'm like Mr. Magoo. Can't really see very much. I'm half deaf, can't hear much. Even my hands, they're so weak. Sometimes I can't even feel the end of my hands. And my reaction times is slow. And sometimes I just lose consciousness, fall asleep. And other times that I forget where I am. And, my legs are sometimes out of control. But he said, at least, I got my driving license. Okay.
You have one like that.
Yeah. Anyway, I forget where I was going now, so I must be getting off.
My brother and the monk,
yeah. So he said, one of the things you also do is you snore. That's just life. We call that sort of advanced chanting. So I said, you're going to snore. I said, it doesn't really matter, I don't really snore. I said, yes, you are going to snore. And it reminds me of another story before I carry on. That's a story during the Australian Open in Melbourne. December. During the Australian Open, there was this gentleman, he was visiting, and he needed a place to stay overnight. And he went to the hotels and motels, they were all booked, solidly booked. And he was just even going to some cheaper hotels. And he found one hotel, he said, look, every room is booked, but there's one room, it's a two-bedder, and the gentleman who stays there, doesn't mind if, somebody else sleeps in the other bed. Two sides, separate beds. And he said, well, I'm so desperate, I'll take it. But, said the receptionist, he said, the reason why that bed is not taken tonight is because that fellow is an old guy and he snores like a jumbo jet. He said, he snores so loudly. He said, it doesn't matter, I can settle that. So, well, no one else has been able to get a wink of sleep. I should warn you. He said, don't worry about it, I'll take that bed. So he took the bed, and in the morning he comes out really refreshed, and the receptionist said, how did you go? He said, I slept so soundly. Wow, you're the first person ever to sleep. What happened to his snoring? Oh, he said, it was so easy, he never snored. How did you manage that? He said, well, when I got my pyjamas on, just before I went into my bed, I just went over to his bed, kissed him on the cheek, and he never went asleep all night. So don't try that, you get use a snore or something. But anyway, this monk, he can't do that sort of trick against our rules. But anyway, he said, well, how did you go? And he said, my plan was, he said, I'll go to sleep first, and then I know I'll snore and I'll keep my brother awake. But what happened was his brother went to sleep first. And so his brother snored really loudly. He thought, I'm not going to get to sleep at all. And he was laying there, realised he's not going to get a wink of sleep because his brother was so loud snoring. And then he remembered some of the advice which I taught him. My advice, it saves a lot of problems, very difficult problems. It's actually practical advice. He said that something which Ajahn Chah used to say to me, it's not the sound disturbs you, it's you who disturb the sound. So, what does that mean? So he decided, instead of disturbing the sound, to open the door of the heart to the sound, to let it be, and to start appreciating it. And because he was a cultured monk from Europe, he started imagining the sound, the snoring, like some cutting edge, modern, experimental jazz. And just like people know, and after a while, if you actually listen to snoring, it's got like a rhythm to it. It's got like a beat. And it's got this lovely crescendo. And then it's mostly woodwind. Sometimes it's like a bit of brass in there as well. A bit of percussion. Mm-hmm. And you've got some false teeth, a bit of a tinkle, maybe, from fillings. So he started to imagine it and to picture it as this amazing modern age cutting, sort of breaking boundaries, music. And he told me, he said, when he woke up in the morning, after a really deep sleep, all he could remember was just how sonorous and melodic was his brother's snoring.
Now that is an amazing little example of how we can change what we experience in life by just changing our perception. Not I don't want this, or why me? Why do I have to do this? That was just a cartoon. You know Hagar the Horrible? He's one of my favourite Norwegians. I always tell even Adjan Bamari is from Norway, and Nito is another Norwegian. Yeah, you know, they're number two and number three. My favourite Norwegian is Hagar the Horrible in the cartoons. And I remember it was supposed to be Vikings. They were raiding and pillaging England. That's my where I was brought up. And as they were raiding and pillaging, this was what this little offsider, Lucky Eddie. And Lucky Eddie was saying, "Well, it's my first time raping and pillaging, you know, in England. You know, I don't mean raping, but you know, just pillaging and stuff. So, what are the English like?" And he said, "Oh, they're dirty, they're lazy, they're uncouth, they're really filthy." And Lucky Eddie said, "Oh, just like us." It's so easy to see the fault in others, but you know, everyone was the same. But anyway, that he was shipwrecked. His, what do they call those boats, the Vikings, long boats, whatever long it is. Boat, yeah. Long boats had sunk. And he was in the storm. He managed to climb onto a rock. And he was shouting out at Thor, the god, "Why me?" And the response from God was, "Why not?" And I thought that was a wonderful little way. And when you say, "Why me?" the answer is, "Why not?" Happens to everybody, but it's not what you experience, but your attitude to it. That's what saves you, or that what makes you sink. And so, on that nautical note, before I finish off, hang on to something else, another story about the old man, the old sailor and the professor. You know that story? Mm-hmm. So why you should meditate, why you should come to places like this. goes off a bit, goes along a bit. Okay, a professor, these are old days when you wouldn't go in a aircraft, you'd go in a boat, passenger liner. So he was travelling from Perth to London, and on the first night at sea, so after dinner, he went on deck, had a stroll on the deck, and there was this old man, an old sailor, and he was looking into the waters, into the ocean. And the professor thought, you know, have a nice conversation. And he leant up on the rail next to the sailor and said, "Old man, how long have you been at sea?" "Oh, ever since I was 14 years of age." Over 50 years. "Wow, such a long time." He said, "You know, one of my hobbies is marine science. You know, all the animals, the sharks, the dolphins, the whales, all these manta rays, all these animals which live in the oceans. You must know a lot, you know, from your experience about marine science." "Marine what?" said the old sailor. "Well, the animals. Look, I don't know anything about them. It's just water and fish, that's all I know." "What?" said the professor. "All these years at sea, and you never picked up a book or learnt about the ocean underneath you? You stupid old man, what a waste of a life." And the professor arrogantly walked off. Second night at sea. It was a beautiful dinner. So the old professor decided to give the old sailor another chance. Because it was a clear night and he was looking up at the stars. That was his other hobby, astronomy. And in those days, before GPS and radio, you needed those stars to guide your ship, to know where you were. So the professor went up to the old man and said, "Old man, sorry, I said nasty things about you yesterday, but one of my hobbies is astronomy. You must know so much about the stars. You must know a lot about astronomy." "Astro what? I don't know anything about the stars. They're just stars, that's all I know. You don't know Ursa Major from Ursa Minor, if there is such a thing?" "No! Wow! All those years at sea, you never learn about the stars and the heavens above you. You stupid old man. What a waste of a life, what a waste of a life." Stormed off again. Third night at sea. He had such a delicious meal by the ship's cook. And it was one of those idyllic evenings at sea with the warm breeze wafting over the ocean. And the old man went up to the sailor, gave him a third chance, and said, "Old man, I understand why it's not that important you know about marine science or astronomy, but the weather. The weather is the most important thing for a sailor to understand. And that I'm going over to London to do a series of talks about meteorology. Let's compare some notes about meteorology." "Meteor what?" said the old sailor. "About the weather, the storms. I know nothing about the weather." "Well, you've never bothered to pick up a book and learn about the weather, which can cyclones and anticyclones and storms and..." "Nope." "You stupid old man. You stupid, stupid old... What a waste of a life." And the fourth night at sea, don't worry, it's ending soon. The fourth night at sea, he never had any dinner because it was one of those really rough nights at sea and the professor suffered from seasickness, so he stayed in his cabin. Never ate. And as it got later and later on into the night time, the storm which was making the boat rock got worse and worse. And the boat was rocking this way and that way, more and more violently, until there was suddenly a big crash. And then it went silent. And the professor was really scared. What made that big crash? Like wood splintering. And then he heard someone running outside his cabin door. The professor was so scared he opened the door. Who do you think was running outside?
The old man,
yeah. And the old man stopped and turned to the professor. "And professor," he said, "in your long distinguished life, have you ever learnt about swimming?" "But actually, no, I can't swim." "You stupid old professor, what a waste of a life. The ship is sinking." With the ball of the answer before you. If you are on the sea, astronomy, meteorology, or marine science is interesting. But what's the most important thing to do if you go to sea? Know how to swim. So what's the most important thing to know about life? How to keep your head above water in the difficulties of life, in the storms which no one can escape from, which sometimes engulf us all. How to keep our head above the water and swim. A lovely little story, just to finish off. And how do you learn how to swim? In Armadale Swimming Class, otherwise known as Club Med, otherwise known as the Armadale Meditation Group. Very good, thank you for listening. And now summing up from Doug. Very good.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you. Thank you.